Call the House Education Committee to order. Good morning, and I'd like to call the House Education Committee to order. Today is Friday, April 28th, 2023. Let the record reflect the time is 08 o'clock. Just before we start today, I just want to put out an announcement. There were three soldiers that had passed away today in a terrible accident up by Healy, and I want to send condolences to their families and their friends. A little rough. One soldier has made it into the hospital. It was a helicopter crash up there. So to the 11th Airborne Division, we love you guys and thank you for your service. Today we have present Representative Hemshoot, Representative Prox, Co-Chair Representative Ruffridge, Representative McKay, and Representative Story, and myself, Representative Allard. I would like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to silence and turn off your cell phones. The staff that will be assisting us today is Linda with the House Records. Welcome, Linda. Kelsey with LIO. Welcome, Kelsey. Lindsay with House Committee Aid. We have two items on today's agenda. The committee will be hearing the HB 111 Education for Deaf and Hard of Hearing and a presentation of Alaska Education Funding. This is the second hearing of HB 111. Today, the committee will hear from the bill sponsor, give an opportunity for amendments, and ask for the will of the committee. I'd like to invite my staff member, Lindsay Causer, to the table. Please place your name on the record and provide us a brief overview of the bill. Please put your name on the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning, House Education Committee. Through the chair, my name is Lindsay Causer, staff to Representative Allard. We went over this bill pretty much in depth on Wednesday, but I do want to touch on a couple of questions that came up and clarify a few things. First, the summary of changes was sent out to each of you, and I'd like to review that first. So this is from version A to version S. Section 1 was not in version A. The new section allows parents to determine the child's chosen method of communication. It requires school districts to provide information regarding the tools and resources available to the child, informs the parents of their rights and the school district's duties, and it provides services for their chosen method of communication. It also includes key term definitions. Section 1 of version A is now section 2 of version S, and this section will codify the existence of a centralized school of the deaf, moving it from admin code to statute. And section 2 of version A has now been deleted. So there's been a few questions regarding the term least restrictive environment. That term is no longer in the new CS version. If you review the new version, that was one of the terms that did get taken out with the changes at Rep. Allard's request. And the difference between admin code and statute, I went back and spoke with legal just to get some clarification, because there was some talk whether or not if it had more weight if a bill was in statute compared to it just being in admin code. The response I got was that an item in admin code can be changed at any moment by the department. What that means is that the centralized school of the deaf could be defunded or removed from by the department at any moment. By putting this into statute, it just gives it a little bit more security, because it would take a vote from the legislator to be able to make any changes there. Although we don't see that coming in the future, it just helps give the deaf community a little bit more security to know that their school is secure and that we stand behind them. So now I'll take any questions from the committee if you have any.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Story.
Yes. Thank you. To the chair, may I ask why you took out least restrictive environment?
Thank you. And I will go ahead and let I almost promoted you there, or not. My staff will go ahead and answer that for you, Lindsay Causer.
Through the chair to Representative Story. Least restrictive environment was what exactly that meant. And when we did the original bill version, a lot of people were confused and felt that we were trying to force all deaf children or hard of hearing children to Anchorage to go to the school of the deaf. And so we just wanted to make sure that in the new version that we gave parents the rights to be able to choose the chosen method of communication and to make sure that they had a say in the way their child received the education and the communication method that they were taught.
Whoever should answer it, I'm sorry, I'm not remembering your last name.
Causer.
Causer, thank you. Sorry about that, Ms. Causer. We've worked together for a while now.
If I could just hold on for just 1 minute, I'm going to do a brief Eddie's. Okay, I call the House Education Committee back to order. I want to recognize that Representative McCormick showed up at 8:07. Thank you very much, Ms. Causer. Can you please continue? I don't know where we even left off at. Was there a representative story? Did you have a question?
Thank you, Chair Allard. I appreciate Ms. Causer telling me that it is what was removed was the least restrictive environment is an educational environment with other students whose primary language or method of communication is American Sign Language. So that was removed. So thank you for clarifying
that. Thank you very much. And I believe even Ms. Baldwin had said that it would be better for us to remove that least restrictive environment. And they just weren't aware that the new CS had brought that forward. All right. Are there any other comments? Oh, go ahead, Representative Hemshoop. Goodness gracious, I apologize, Representative Story.
That's fine, thank you. I'm
it's a compliment.
I'm honored.
Okay.
Yes.
I know, yeah, that would have been a different story. Go ahead.
To the committee, I've been talking with some parents the last few days, and one thing in this bill, and I missed the deadline, but I just wanted to bring it up because I think it really is something that further legislation or in following up with districts.
Representative Story, may I please pause you for a moment? Does this have anything to do with asking I keep doing that to you. Ms. Causer, any direct questions in regards to the bill? I want to make sure.
Sure, follow up.
Okay, thank you.
Having to do with Ms. Causer, did any time did you think about adding to Section 1 provides a parent with training to support the child in the methods chosen? What I've heard from other parents is they choose a method, but then the school districts do not give them help in learning sign language, and they've had to ask districts if they will help pay for an interpreter, like a group of parents, and that hasn't happened. And so I'm wondering if you considered adding to this support for the parent to learn.
Through the chair to Representative Story, I believe in Section 1, the first lines on page 1, lines 5 through about 15-14, this whole section is directing the school district to provide the information, and that includes like educating them on the different methods of communication for the child who is deaf or hard of hearing, including listening and spoken language and bilingual approach. And then if you turn to the next page, page 2, number 2, which is lines 3 through 6, there it also requires that they provide the services to the child. So our intent with Section 1 was that there would be a standard of information and training that was provided to the parent so that they understood the different methods of communication so that they're able to best choose the best method of communication for their child.
Follow up. Thank you for that. And I'm going a step deeper. Once they choose, it's like we would ask them to provide training to the parent so they're able to support their child in the method chosen. So I see that missing from this bill, but I missed the amendment deadline.
I would disagree, but okay. Are there any other comments or questions? Okay. We will move on to amendments. The amendment deadline for HB 111 was set for Wednesday, April 26, 2023. Our office received no amendments. Would anyone on the committee like to offer a conceptual amendment? Seeing none, what is the will of the committee, Representative Ruffridge?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill number 111, also referred to as 33-LS0504/S, be moved from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Brief at ease. When 11 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, we will take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. Back to order, I wanted to give a special thanks to Clara. Thank you for being here today. We all appreciate it. Richard, thank you so much for being part of this and bringing this information to us so we can get this fabulous bill passed. And I also wanted to thank you, Andre, for for being here and translating for all of us so we understand. Smiles to everybody. Thank you. Okay, now we're going to move on to our second agenda item, Alaska Education Funding Review. I'd like to invite Ed King to the table. Please place your name on the record and begin your presentation. Thank you so much. This is going to be a lot, and I'm excited to hear it all.
Chair Ellen.
Oh, Representative Hemshoot.
I just wanted to know, through the chair, can we ask questions as we go, or do you want them at the end?
I want to ask Representative, I keep doing this, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to demote you. Ed, if you feel comfortable with that, I don't know how many pages your Alaska Education Funding Briefing is. I just know that sometimes if we go every few pages without a lot of questions, we forget if we don't. Is that okay with you if we kind of go through, or is there a point that maybe you can say, okay, is that all right?
Representative, Madam Chair, Ed King for the record. I don't mind taking questions as we go. I think that would be more helpful to the committee members. We do run the risk of running out of time, but I'm happy to come back at a later date if that's your will.
Okay, that sounds good. Representative Hemshoot, will that work for you? Representative Story, are you good? Okay, thank you. All right, go ahead, Mr. King.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this presentation is, at your request, was, if I understood the request correctly, it was to look a little bit deeper into the different funding mechanisms for the school districts across Alaska, and basically answer these two questions. How much money does the Alaska school districts get? Where does that come from? And why is our spending higher than average? I know you've heard several presentations on this topic about the funding formula and about funding in general. So I'm not going to try to reiterate any of that. I do want to note that as I pointed out on the first slide, this is an exploration of data. It's not an analysis of data. Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You. And I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. Could you please give us just a tiny bit of your background, maybe a paragraph, so people understand why I asked you to come forward to speak on this?
Madam Chair, I'm a professional economist. A master's degree from the University of Alaska Fairbanks in economics, an undergrad degree from the University of Washington. I have a professional certificate from Stanford University. I'm currently the committee resources aide for Representative McKay, and I'm just available here to the legislature and to the majority to help shed light on whatever I can in terms of my expertise. So my background is in data, and I'm happy to share my insights with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I was saying, I don't want to confuse this presentation with an analysis. There's no statistical analysis. There's no econometrics. There was no experimental design or anything like that. I'm just taking data that is available to the public and presenting it in different ways that can spark questions, and then looking at the data a little deeper to see if we can find any answers to those questions. I just want to caution members not to interpret this as being advice or anything along that line. So, Madam Chair, the first graphic is just the graphic that was presented to you from the Department of Education. There was a spreadsheet with a lot of different funding sources to show how the districts get money. And I just presented it here as a visual to show the direction that money is coming from. So you can see there are three basic buckets of money. There's money that comes from the state, there's money that comes from the local government, there's money that comes from the federal government. When you put it all together, the foundation award, that is the BSA, the calculation, the funding formula, it generates about 40% of all of the funding. And I know that's what we focus on a lot here in this building. But there's a lot more to the story than just that. And so when we start talking about data, when it aggregates funding sources, it starts to become very confusing for the public as you try to explain why there are differences. So that's kind of the goal here today. This next slide, it breaks those down. It just kind of summarizes them. Notice that the information that was provided on slide 4 is from the 2023 fiscal year 23 numbers. And all told, it's about $2.7 billion in that spreadsheet, excluding the existing balance of their current funds. On this slide, this is the data from the U.S. Census. And the most recent data that's available from the U.S. Census is from 2020. And so throughout these slides, I'm looking at the 2020 data because it's the most recently available data. And when you look at these numbers, what you can see is that that foundation formula, plus the other grants like the residential school grants and quality school grants and other grants that the state distributes to the school districts, totals about $1.2 billion. In addition to that, the state also provides transportation funding as a separate check, and it also provides indirect funding to the school districts through either on behalf payments, which is helping them reduce their unfunded liability, and through construction and debt service reimbursement. So we have these other sources of funds. So all told, it's about a little more than $1.6 billion of the state's funding that goes to the school districts. The local governments also contribute to the district's funding. The required and voluntary contributions from the school districts totals $516 million. They also raise a little bit of money from school lunch programs. And there are other avenues that the school districts, most of that is in-kind contributions or other things that the school districts provide.
Representative Hemshute, do you have a question?
Sorry, I could wait till the end of the slide.
Okay, thank you.
And then, Madam Chair, on the right, the federal sources of fund, this are grants that go either directly to the schools or to the schools through the Department of Education. Most of this is impact aid, which is funding from the federal government to compensate for children that are in schools that are military, or I'm sorry, that are federal employees. So these are military kids. These are students with parents in other federal service. And there are Title I funds, which mostly is directed towards low income. There's nutrition, child nutrition, special ed, these other funds. So all of these grants all told is another $381.8 million in 2020.
Thank you. Representative Hemshute.
Hi, thank you. Through the chair, on the middle section, the local sources, in the 54 districts, so in the district where I work, school lunch is a money loser. We don't actually gain on our school lunch program. We can't quite make ends meet on that. So are you saying that in general, though, a school lunch program actually is a money maker?
Representative Hemshute, through the chair, I wouldn't say that. We're only looking at revenue streams here and not the cost of delivery. So it's very possible that the school lunch output, the expense of doing it, is greater than that 7.1.
Got it. Thank you.
Follow up or anything? No? Okay. Representative Prox?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, just quickly, the amount for school bond debt reimbursement or even, I guess, the local taxes that are going to support the buildings themselves, are they in the numbers that you're presenting here, or is that an additional amount?
Representative Prox, through the chair, in the bucket to the right, the state sources, if this is construction money that's going directly to school districts for operation and maintenance, or it's earmarked directly for construction, it will probably show up in that other category. That is included. I would also say that this is looking at the revenue streams and not the expenditures. And so if the school districts are collecting money for bond payments, it should be included in that other category.
Thank you. Okay, continue.
So, Madam Chair, all told, this is $2.6 billion that goes to the school districts, the 54 districts across the state. Looking at how much that compare, or how that compares to how funding has changed over time, if you just start at the 2021, the preliminary numbers, we have a total value from the U.S. Census for 2021, but not the more granular level. So, if I just put everything in 2021 dollars and kind of compare that to history and see how funding has changed over time, you can see that in 2007, 2008, there was a pretty major shift in the funding policy of the state. Before that, it was relatively flat. And since then, it's been relatively flat when you look at all funding sources. Naturally, the question here, I would like to point out that the most recent data here is 2021. And so we are now budgeting for 2024. And there are high inflation values in 2022 and probably 2023, which would imply that we're now, since funding hasn't increased proportionally, we probably are below that level at this point. So just to keep that in mind.
Question, Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, I'm confused. From 2017, that shows an increase, but we haven't increased. So total funding, this slide there could be federal increases, or so whatever increase has not been necessarily the state's contribution, but local. So the increase that we see reflected here, however small it is not necessarily the state's increase.
Representative Hemshute, through the chair, that is correct.
Got it. Thank you.
Continue.
Madam Chair, the natural question when looking at the data presented this way is, what's that bump in 2015? And so in anticipation of that question, the next slide really helps to explain that. So breaking down the funding sources from the state, only from the state, you can see the four categories are reported by the U.S. Census. So the pupil transportation funding is relatively flat. That's on the bottom. You can almost not see it. State grants, this is your foundation formula. Outside of the foundation funding, other types of grants like the quality schools grants, for example. That other category is money for things like debt service reimbursement, construction. And then the blue on the top are the on-behalf payments. These are payments that the state is making to reduce the district's unfunded liability for teacher retirements. And you can see that that starts in 2008. And this is because of the cap that's put into place via statute that says that the school districts don't have to contribute more than a certain percentage, and then the state picks up the rest. That's the blue part that you're seeing there. In addition to the on-behalf payments that the state is making, the school districts themselves are also making contributions to that unfunded liability, but that's showing up. It's being paid through other sources, so the other sources of revenue that they're getting, for example, the foundation formula. So there are two components to that. But what I would like to point out is that in 2015, you can see that really large spike in funding on the on-behalf payments. That was the $3 billion transfer to the unfunded liability that happened. And what you'll notice is that prior to 2015, the payments that the state was making on behalf were greater than after that point. And that was the intent of that transfer to the programs was, or to the funds, was to reduce future payments into those funds that were the liability of state. We do still have an unfunded liability, so that blue bar does exist. If that ever got paid off, that blue bar would go away. And so that is contributing to this conversation.
Thank you. So I have a question for you. So it's for me, and correct me if I'm wrong, there is a clear increase on education from 2002 to 2020. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, that is correct. I would just note that this is not adjusted for inflation.
Okay. Thank you. Is Mr. King, does this graph include the BSA?
Madam Chair, the BSA would be in that green state grants. It's the majority of that green state grants wedge. Yes.
Okay. And on this graph, do we know the percentage that is? I've heard it thrown around, the percentage, but I don't want to say anything on record. I want it to, so that I don't give out any misinformation. Do you know the percentage of increase, or are we going to see that in another slide? I mean, I would just say maybe the percentage of increase from 7 to 20. Or
just eyeballing it, Madam Chair, it looks like it's about an 80 or 90% increase, or maybe 100% increase, but I don't have that number off the top of my head.
So education is based on eyeballing it. We're at almost 100% increase from 2007 or 2002 to current?
From 2002, Madam Chair.
Wow. Okay. Representative Story, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, through the chair. Mr. King, you said it wasn't adjusted for inflation. What would that answer to that question be adjusted for inflation?
Thank you, Madam. Or thank you, Representative Story, through the chair. Inflation over this period was about 55%. So the funding has increased from 2002 as the base year by more than inflation. That's correct.
Thank you. And I wanted to welcome Representative Ortez to the room. Okay, please continue.
Madam Chair, it might also be worth pointing out that there was a very significant change in the education funding formula back when oil prices rose in the 2008-2009 time period. And so you do see, if you use a base year after that change rather than before that change, then the answer to that last question would change. If you're comparing the inflation adjustment number, I'd just go back a slide. If you compare the adjusted inflation numbers from 2002, you can see that the values have increased by more than inflation. But if you start from 2008, that would not be the case.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Story.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm just clarifying that this is just our funding stream. Like I look at transportation, and that's stayed pretty flat, what we've been spending. And I know districts say they're spending about 30% more than what we've been getting for transportation. So they're taking it from their general fund BSA dollars because we've flat funded that. But this is just showing not the expenses, but what we're getting from the state.
Representative Story, through the chair, yes, this is only looking at the revenue side of things. And I would just point out that, as you mentioned, the school districts have the capacity to move funding streams to different categories of expenditures. And so, yes, if they are short, quote unquote, short funded in one category, they can backfill that with another.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, wow. Okay. So we hear school districts concerned about they don't have enough money for transportation, but if we've had perhaps 100% increase from 202 to 220, at any time, they could have reallocated those funds or reappropriated those funds into transportation.
Madam Chair, I would suggest that that has been the case. If the funding has been inadequate and they had funded it, it must have come from another source.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hemshoot, you had a question?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Mr. King, when did we add in to the formula the district cost factor? There were some losses, I think 2002, the Moore case was settled, not settled in 2002, but there was Kasaili and then there were more, so there were adequacy suits, and those resulted in some changes. I think one of those actually changed the formula. I'm not sure I'm right about that. But at some point we added in district cost factor. When was that?
Representative Hemshoot, through the chair, the district cost factor appears since 1998 when the last reform. The factors themselves have changed at least one time since then, but not in several years.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next slide.
So, Madam Chair, the next slide is comparing the amount of money that the school districts are getting from the state versus the local government's contributions. And in Alaska, it's very clear that the majority of the funding for the school districts comes from the state rather than the local governments. And that's often brought forward as an explanation for why Alaska's funding is higher than other states. I would just point out that there's a wide range of different ways that states can fund their education systems, whether it's through state funding or through local funding, or those are basically your options, right? And the big difference is you're still taxing the same people. You're just taxing them at different levels of government. And so the question is, through state funding, do you want to tax people from one district and then give that money to another district, or do you want that money to stay in the district from which it was collected? And that creates a little bit of a policy decision, because in the case where you're taking money from one district and giving it to another, there's questions about fairness. And if you're taking, or if you're allowing school districts to raise money on their own and keep it internally, then that creates questions around equity, because wealthier districts will be more funded. And so the conversation about state local contributions is an important one. In our constitution for Alaska, it does require that the legislature be the appropriating body that is responsible for making sure our school districts are funded. And that is one of the reasons why we rely more heavily on state funding than on local funding.
Thank you. Representative Prax, did you have a question? I saw your hand wiggle.
Again, yes, you used the word that the legislature is required by the Constitution to fund. And I believe the word in the Constitution is maintain. How you maintain that is up to the legislature, not necessarily funding.
Representative Prox, through the chair, I would agree with you that the Constitution does use the word maintain. I believe that in the adequacy lawsuits that has been further defined to include funding. So I'm not a lawyer, and I it's not my area of expertise, but I believe the courts have interpreted that language.
Thank you. Follow up, just to clarify that for me, where that came from. I believe Representative Hemshoot mentioned the Moore settlement. Is that where that comes from?
Representative Prox, through the chair, the Moore lawsuit was mostly about funding rural communities and ensuring that they had adequate funding because they don't have a local tax base. And so, yes, that question was addressed, or at least brought forward in the Moore case. I don't remember. The case was settled out of court, so I don't know that there is actually an interpretation.
I really appreciate you knowing all this. It's enlightening. You're doing outstanding. Representative Story?
Thank you. Through the chair, is this slide inflation-proof?
Representative Story, through the chair, no.
Through the chair, if you could prepare it inflation-proofed, I would find that's really helpful because it's more appropriate to compare inflation-adjusted spending if one's looking over a long time period.
Representative Story, I can do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Representative Himshut, did you have Representative? Okay, Representative Prox then.
Now we're going to get in the weeds, but if we're going to compare inflation adjusted, we should also compare other industries, how they have, like the airline industry, has the price of an airline ticket kept up with inflation, or have the airline industries responded in a different way? Just have some point of reference.
Mr. King, would you like to respond?
Representative Allard, those analyses are possible. It would take time, and taking time would require doing an opportunity cost evaluation for me. If I was to do it, if the legislature wanted to do that information through a consultant, they could certainly pay for that. That's
beyond the scope of this slide presentation right now.
Representative, Madam Chair, yes. This was an exploration of data and not an analysis of the data. An analysis would take a lot more effort, and it would require me to do something different.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. I believe through legislative finance, they have adjusted a chart very similar, and it shows that we have lost a lot of buying power, and we cannot buy in education what we could buy in earlier charts. So I think it would be great if we got that, or if you even could find that. I think that would help. I don't know about the comparison between different industries. I can see that, but we do have.
Actually, Representative Story, we have Mr. Bell on the line. Mr. Bell, are you there? Is he on?
Yes, for the record, this is Connor Bell, Legislative Finance Division.
Thank you. I'm not sure if you just heard a couple of questions from Representative Prox and then a follow-up on piggybacking on that from Representative Story. Can you answer any of those questions in regards to an analysis and a comparative analysis in regards to inflation?
Thanks, Chair Allard. My understanding of the question, yes, that so when legislative finance, when we're adjusting for inflation for education, we're using the consumer price index for all items. We acknowledge that the specific cost structure for school districts may be different and not perfectly represented by the consumer price index, but it is difficult to try to separate out those items of the consumer price index, which specifically apply to school districts. So in our analysis, again, we are just using the consumer price index for all items, encompassing the entire index.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Okay. Mr. King, would you like to continue, please?
Madam Chair, on the same topic, if I may.
Please.
Madam Chair, I would caution, I suppose, when you're evaluating inflation proofing, it is very important to compare or to understand what you're comparing. And so the chart that we're looking at here is specific to all state funding. Your number would be different if you were only looking at the BSA value. Your number would be different if you're only looking at foundation funding. And your number comparing to a previous year would also matter. I would point out, I'll just go back to slide 6. You will see that compared to 2002, we've funded by more than inflation. Compared to 2014, we've funded less than inflation. And so that comparison, that base year, is going to be the key metric. And again, I'll also point out that the data that is available from the census is only, this data is only available up to 2021. And so for comparison, I only went up to 2021. 2022 was a very high inflation year. And if you carry this out further, you're going to find that adjusted for inflation, it is accurate that our current funding is below the inflation for more years than this represents.
Thank you. Okay. Continue.
Madam Chair, just slide 9 is looking at it proportionally. So just looking at, so taking out federal funds and just looking at the split between the state and local government and how much money is being funded from which source, you can see over time, the state share has actually increased slightly. It was just under 70%. It's just over 70% now of money from the state versus the local government. And again, this is excluding federal dollars. But the point here is that the state is the primary funder of education. Looking across the country and seeing how other states fund their education on that same spectrum, how much is state versus local, you can see Alaska funds about 74% of its education funding from non-federal sources. And nationally, that average is right around half, 50-50, although you can see that very few states are actually right around 50. A lot of states have very high state funding. In the extreme, you can see Hawaii, who does not allow local funding at all. They fund everything through the state. And on the other extreme, you can see New Hampshire, who funds very little of their money from the state government and relies heavily on local property taxes.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question from the previous slide and then a question on this slide, so I guess we can go back. So when we were talking about adjusting for CPI, again, the Moore suit was specific to rural Alaska. CPI is Anchorage. So is there anything here that helps us understand when we talk about inflation adjusting something, there's another adjustment that has to happen beyond CPI in Alaska when we talk about rural and remote places. Can you say anything about that?
Representative Hemshute, through the chair, yes, it's one of our biggest problems in Alaska and studying our economy is that a lot of our data for rural and small communities is very lacking. And so the information from the urban centers tends to overtake everything else. I would say, though, that the percentage of the population that is in those areas with less available data is a smaller portion of the population, and so it doesn't drag the numbers far, but it does definitely, there is an effect in the rural communities that isn't captured by looking at data specific to the urban centers. And I actually will talk about that a little bit more.
Okay. Follow-up. Yeah, my other question is on the slide we were on, I guess, 10, or really any of these slides. How do you factor in county funding? You know, you said down south, it's different. Where would that, when we talk about the state's amount of funding, if you have another entire layer of government in there with taxing authority, does this take into account a county's contribution down south as part of their state funding?
Representative Hemshute, through the chair, yes. There, the funding from the state level, which has jurisdiction over all of the local governments, is the state funding. And all subunits, so counties, boroughs, cities, any local government or municipality would be considered part of the local government contributions.
So just, I want to be really clear. So when we're looking at slide 10 and it says there's a wide range of state/local splits around the country, local would include anything that's not state. So county, city, municipality, all that. Borough. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on this slide. It's super interesting. If you look at the United States, the blue line down the center of the states that are to the right of it, if I'm looking at it, their education is, based on my experience in sitting and researching, is better. They have better results. And if you look at the left of the United States line, the blue line, those states seem to be struggling a little bit as you go higher up as far as their results on their education. It's kind of a little bit of a mixture, but it's an interesting where I'm seeing these happen. Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair,
that has a play in, you know, I don't want to be skewed or anything, but I'm wondering, does that have a play when they're less state funded? It's amazing the results you're receiving. Do you have a comment on that?
Madam Chair, I would just say that kind of the whole point in visualizing data is to spark questions like that and to see, is there something interesting here? That is an interesting observation. I would have to check the data to see if it's valid or not. I don't know. But it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I feel like when they go higher up. Representative Story, thank you.
Thank you. Just in defense of my home state where I was growing up through the chairs, I'm from Minnesota, and Minnesota has got a very strong achievement data. They do have, however, a high achievement gap between a lot of their subpopulations, and they're really working on that.
Thank you, Representative Story.
Yes, and Madam Chair, just in response to that, that is the question of the key question of how you fund government is whether you want the money to stay where it's collected or whether you want the money to be distributed where it's needed. That's at the core of how you fund your government.
Thank you. Continue.
Madam Chair, the next slide is just to show that the state of Alaska, because we have the proportion of our population that is in federal service is higher than in any other state. And so the state of Alaska does receive a lot more money per capita than from the federal government than any other state. So that is part of the explanation for why we have more funding. It's just an observation that we should keep in mind.
So based on that slide, we're heavily relying on federal funding. We are a federally funded education state, clearly, based on your slide.
Madam Chair, we are more so than any other state. I would point out that the money that comes from the federal government represents, what is that, about a sixth of the total funding. So it's not that the federal government funds all of our education, but more so than any other state. That is correct.
Okay, we're going to go to Representative Story and then Representative Hinshue.
Through the chair, I believe this is also true with federal funding in the area of military infrastructure, that we receive the highest state dollars in those different areas than all the other states.
Representative,
question?
Yes. Okay. Through the chair, is that accurate?
Representative Story, through the chair, I believe that's what this graphic is showing. Yes, that's correct.
Follow up?
Sure.
I was commenting on other areas of our government, that it is also true that in spending in infrastructure and in the military, and that we are also receive the highest federal funding of any state.
Representative Story, through the chair, yes, that is correct. Our economy is more dependent, or a larger share of our economy is tied to the federal government than other states in all aspects. That's correct.
Thank you. And I just want to make sure that we keep these to questions about the slides, not comments about how we feel or what we're thinking at that moment. We can hold those to the end. Go ahead, Representative Hinshue.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. King. My hometown, Sitka, is surrounded by national forests. We're hemmed in by ocean on one side and national forest on the other side. So we receive some payment that might not happen in other places. So do you have any idea what percent of the state is federal? Because I think that impacts the amount that we get for our schools as well, certainly in Sitka.
Representative Hinshue, through the chair. So there would be additional funding from the federal government to a local government for federal lands within their jurisdiction. It wouldn't be necessarily tied directly to school funding, although that's unrestricted funds, and so that community could use that money for school if it would like.
So I'm going to go ahead and put on the record, stop with your comments, ask a direct question on the slide so we can continue with the slide. I don't want to hear a prologue or an epilogue about a comment so you can get the answer you're looking for.
Chair Allard,
ask a direct question so we can get through the slides. Go ahead, Mr. King.
So, Madam Chair, that kind of concludes the where the money comes from question. So we're now turning to the next question of how do we spend it as a state. And so the first slide I'd like to show is just kind of build the large picture, and then we'll drill down farther and farther into the data as we have time and as you'd like. So to start, big picture, we know that Alaska is a high spending state when it comes to education. According to the most recent data, that's 18 $1,313 per student, and that's just current spending. Debt service and capital outlay is in addition to that. This is the data that is available to compare ourselves to other states, and so getting deeper into the data requires a little bit of a caveat because the data comes from a different source. So just big picture, if we were to be a average state, if we wanted to fund our education to the average of the nation, the maximum kind of quote unquote cut available funding to cut would be about $638 million. That's kind of the ballpark that we're playing in if that was the goal. So just for kind of building the picture. And then we can dig a little bit deeper into the data and understand those unique positions with regard to Alaska on why spending at the average is maybe not feasible. And so one of the questions or one of the comments that come up frequently is that Alaska is a high cost state. And that is accurate. The operating cost as reported to the US Census shows that Alaska spends more money on operations than any other state on a per capita basis. And that's about $1,020 per student more than the national average. And so if we accept that is a uncontrollable cost, that explains why $135 million of that $640 million, that would be uncontrollable. And so if we make that assumption, now it's possible that that number could be reduced through efficiencies. If we had, you know, different schools or different energy delivery systems or different infrastructure, it's possible that number could be reduced. But mostly that's because we have several small schools. And because you have a fixed cost over a smaller population, your per student cost is going to be higher.
And this is per capita?
This is per student. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Hi, yes. Through the chair, can you define operating costs?
Representative Story, through the chair, I don't think I caught the definition in my future slide, but it's things like your fuel costs, your electricity costs, your property costs, your maintenance for your buildings, your insurance, your sewer, water, whatever, electricity, all of your utilities and major operations. There are some salaries and benefits that are included in the operating costs for, I believe, for janitor services and things like that. But it's mostly non-salary costs.
Follow up? No?
Through the chair, it would just be a comment that I know, like property costs, if that's in here, I know Juneau had a $1.2 million increase in our property insurance in the last 4 years. So, yes, I can see where operating costs would be high.
Representative Cox.
Well, I'd rather, I guess, just go through the slides because this isn't to justify either raising or cutting. It's to try and just understand where we are. We'd be here all day if we got into every little detail.
Yep. Okay. We'll continue. Thank you, Representative Fox. I appreciate that.
So, Madam Chair, the next adjustment that we can make is that we know that Alaska has a higher cost of living than other states. And therefore, if we were just funding at the national average, we would have to fund more than every other state to account for the fact that Alaska costs more in order to do the same things. And when I make that adjustment based off of the available data, it explains about $91 million of the additional funding. And however, as Representative Hemshut pointed out earlier, the regional cost price parities data is heavily skewed towards the urban areas. And so it's very likely that some of the costs of delivery in the rural areas would explain some additional amount, but the data is not readily available to do that analysis, and I simply didn't have the time to do that analysis deeper. So there is further explanation that could be made for cost of living in the rural communities.
Thank you. Next slide.
The next slide shows the difference in expenditures, the difference in expenditures across the district. So these are just ordered from the largest districts to the right to the smallest districts on the left. And you can see that the districts in red, these are districts that have, I believe, 1,000 or less students, if I remember right. And then The green is 4,000 or more. And so the six districts on the right are the largest districts. They account for about 80% of the student population in the state. But you'll notice that as you move to the left and the districts get smaller, so do the costs. The cost of delivery, that's mostly operating costs, but it's also other costs as well, do go up. And so there is some explanation that can be made for the fact that rural communities cost more to operate.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if we remove the higher operating costs and the cost of living that we've already accounted for, it leaves about $400 million or so of unexplained additional costs over average. And so if I separate that between instruction and support, the way that it's categorized by the census, you can see that about $153 million of that is attributable to the instruction side, and about $241 million of that is attributable to support services, excluding operating costs because we've already accounted for those. And so then this is kind of a separation, and we'll go through the left side first and then the right side here to go a little bit deeper. It's worth pointing out, Madam Chair, that when we talk about instruction versus support, there are different definitions of what those words mean. And so when you look at the census data and how they categorize information, the instruction component accounts for about 50% or so of all of the expenditures. And this is all expenditures, including your capital costs, your debt service, your everything, pupil transportation. When you go onto the state's website and you pull down the district data and you look at it, how it's categorized between instruction versus support, you'll find that about 75% of the expenditures are categorized as instruction spending. And there's two reasons for this difference. The first reason is that some of the components that the census considers support, the Department of Education considers instruction. Those are specifically your support services for instruction and your support services for students. Those are categorized as support services by the census and as instruction by the state. The other thing that I would point out is that when you pull down the data from the state's website, it only is showing you data from the general fund of the districts. It's not showing you any of the other funds' expenditures. And so the total expenditure on the right, the 75% number, comes from a total of about $2 billion. Whereas on the left, the total expenditures is more like $2.6 billion. And so that difference really changes the proportions.
Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. And this slide is very helpful. Thank you, Mr. King. Through the chair, so you're telling me that the state data, the support that they qualify count as instruction is like our paraprofessionals?
Representative Story, through the chair, based on the reading of the chart of accounts, it seems like the paraprofessionals, as we call them, or the classroom aides, as they're defined by the census, those are included in the instruction category. The instruction support category is more like sending teachers to conferences and things like that.
Like professional development?
Representative Story, through the chair, if it's direct training for instruction, it's captured as instruction. If it's training more general, then it's captured as support. And Madam Chair, I would also point out that this is all very confusing, and it may be the case that different districts or different states report the same expenditure in different categories because of this kind of nuance. So that I can't speak to the validity of the data in terms of where the money is being categorized, but the totals should be the same.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
So looking at, Madam Chair, the next slide, separating the instruction component. These are what the U.S. Census data show as the three components of instruction. And so they break it out between instruction salaries, instruction benefits, and then other instruction. Other instruction being like classroom equipment and supplies. So the salaries, of course, are teacher payment, teacher salaries. And then the benefits are health insurance and pension primarily. And you'll notice that in the benefits, it does include those on behalf payments. These are the payments that the state is making for the districts to reduce their unfunded liability. So this is how you can break down the components. And so that allows us to look a little bit more closely at the different components of instruction and compare us to other states, which is what I'm doing on the next slide. So on the left is only looking at the salaries, and this is adjusted for cost of living and looking at just the instruction salaries. This is the money that's paid to teachers. What you'll see is that Alaska is very close to the middle of the pack in terms of how much we pay the teachers, adjusted for cost of living, and arguably maybe below average once you adjust for the fact that the rural communities should be paying their teachers more in order to attract them. So it would appear, based on the data, that if there is additional funding that's going to school districts, it's not because it's going to the teachers. If you look at the right, then you'll see that the instruction benefits are much higher in Alaska than the average. It accounts for about $120 million of the $140-ish million that was attributable to instruction. And so what you're seeing there is that Alaska has more than likely higher costs of healthcare, but also it's those on behalf payments. Those payments that are going to pay down our unfunded liabilities for previous defined benefits programs, it's being captured as a benefit to current teachers. And so that might be a little bit of a misperception for the public. They're thinking that we have one of the better benefits packages in the state. But remember that some of that money is going to teachers that are already retired and not necessarily the ones that are working now.
Could you repeat that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would say that I was just pointing out that
literally repeat what you just said so that it's on public record loud and clear.
Yes, Madam Chair, the benefits on this slide, the benefits include not only the benefits that are accruing to current teachers, but some of that is going to teachers that have already retired, but their benefits are not fully funded.
Any questions? Representative Hemshoot?
Thank you. Through the chair, does the term benefits include health insurance costs?
Representative Hemshoot, through the chair, yes.
Bobbitt?
Through the chair, do you have a sense of what portion of benefits is health insurance?
Representative Hemshoot, through the chair, unfortunately, that data wasn't disaggregated that way, so I would have to dig a little bit deeper than I have. I don't.
I was just waiting on Representative Story. You have a question? No?
I'm sure I do.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Story.
Through the chair, as far as the unfunded liability, is this true for other state employees in this state of Alaska, the other public employees?
Representative Story, through the chair, that is correct. That is true for other state employees in Alaska. It's also true for any other state that has an unfunded liability, that same thing is happening there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So, Madam Chair, just breaking down this waterfall diagram kind of shows, you know, if Alaska were an average state, if the policy goal was to fund education at the national average, it would cost about $1.8 billion in total funding. That doesn't necessarily have to be state funding from all sources. And as we discussed, about $135 million of that is explainable by the higher cost of operations. That's mostly because we have a lot of small schools and in the rural communities where the cost of energy is much higher than other places. So it's not likely that number could be reduced a lot. The other $91 million is just based on the fact that we have higher costs of living. Again, we can't really do much about that. But the three on the right, we do have some control, or you have some control as the legislature, if you wanted to do something. And again, I caveat that this is all based on 2020 data. We're now looking at 2024 budgets. And so these numbers are not reflective of the budget you're currently considering. This is just informational. But if you were looking for ways to reduce funding to education or find more efficiencies, I'm just simply showing what the data suggests where you might want to look. And so the higher teacher benefits, this could actually be reduced by the legislature by, again, appropriating money to the unfunded liability, reducing that liability or taking off that liability away from the school districts would reduce the amount of money that they need for that category. So it would, in effect, be an increase in funding through a decrease in expenditures that they are bearing. The $241 million in support services, that's what we'll dig into in the next few slides, just to kind of try to track down where that might be happening. And then there is another $52 million in other expenditures it's impossible based on the data that we have to figure out where that money is. So I'll dig into that support. And just for definitions, I'll skip these next two slides. But for your reference, if you want to know what is in a category, you can get some ideas on these two slides based off of the chart of accounts. So that $240 million, if you break it down into where what categories of support is Alaska spending more than if it were an average? And what's kind of striking is that the first thing that I notice is that the general administration, this is your district cost, your superintendent, Alaska actually, despite the fact that we have many small districts, doesn't actually have a higher expenditure for their superintendents than we would expect, which is kind of surprising. But it's not, it doesn't appear that there's a lot of opportunity within the district level to make a lot of gains. In the school administration, this is mostly like your principal's office and things like that. There is $40 million that you would expect, more than you would expect if you were an average state. I believe that this is mostly, again, attributable to very small schools. So you need a principal's office, whether you have one student or 1,000 students. And so that might explain why our principal office budgets are higher than we might expect. The other category is mostly HR, payroll, accounting, things like that. That's mostly, or it's hard to explain exactly what that is, but you could probably make the case that that is due to those same benefits, the unfunded liability, and then also the small schools. So the two categories, the two largest categories on here, kind of strike me as something that is interesting and that you might, if you were interested in trying to find efficiencies, where you might want to look. Or at least get a better understanding of what's going on there. Again, pupil support is things like your nurses and your counselors. And instructional staff support is mostly like in-service training, curriculum development, conferences, travel, things like that. So breaking it down, I just wanted to see what would happen. Yes, ma'am.
Where are the teachers?
What
part of this circle does the money stay in the classroom?
So, Madam Chair, this graph is showing you the additional expenditures in the support category. So the instruction category is not included here.
Okay, thank you.
So breaking down the support categories and just indexing them to 2005, which was the oldest available data at the district level, and then just watching how those numbers change over time, just to see if it was instructive or interesting, if anything interesting struck me or for your enlightenment. And the first two things that kind of stick out are that community services jumped in 2012 to 2014. Community services are things like school district events that it hosts for the community. It was a $3 million a year jump for those 3 years. I don't know what that was, but it's since kind of dissipated and may or may not be important. If it's of interest, I believe Ms. or Representative Hemshute has an answer.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm not sure, but around that time, assuming this is looking at all funding sources, there were federal grants for after-school programs. Would that account for that amount?
Representative Hemshute, there is a category that is student activities that would capture that. So this is more things like after-school, like concerts or drama club or maybe barbecues or things like that, where the community is using the school grounds for a community event. And so I don't know, but it's actually not really relevant at this point because that spike is gone now. So the other thing that's really interesting is that instruction support has grown dramatically, much faster than any other category. And so there might be something interesting there.
Alec?
Through the chair, using the definition, the support category is murky for me. So if you don't have the classroom teachers that you need, but instead you replace those with paras, or you've increased class size to the point where you need a para educator, would para educator fall under instruction support?
Representative Hemshute, through the chair, my interpretation of the chart of accounts suggests that classroom aides get counted under instruction and not instruction support.
Follow up? Are you?
Yeah, maybe one more.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
You're
the
welcome.
Chair. Yeah, I'm just trying really hard to understand that because it doesn't correspond to what I see mm-hmm. in my lived experience. And so another thought I have is that we let go of all of our librarians and we use a para to shelve books. So I wonder, you know, again, but that's not a para in a classroom. So I'm not sure if it would fall under support. So I'm just trying to make sense of the data. Thank you for helping me ask the questions.
Maybe we could dig a little further for you too and get back with you. Representative Story.
Yes, thank you. And I went back to slide 22 and 23 when I'm looking at instructional support. In the census, it has computer-assisted instruction. And it seems like we have been going more and more technology and training with that. That would make sense in some ways. But, yeah, I agree with Rep. Hallard. We should ask more questions by the districts and other people.
That,
yeah,
that would be wonderful.
And Madam Chair, I would just point out that according to the way that the chart of accounts is written, if you're a teacher that's delivering education directly to a student, it should be counted as instruction. If you're assigning a student to use technology outside of the classroom, it should be included in support. How districts actually report those expenses, though, is unclear.
I agree. Okay. Continue, please. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, the two things that are kind of interesting here, I guess, are first that instruction support has grown tremendously. And then second, it's important to notice that special education instruction and support have grown at a faster rate than non-special ed instruction. And if it is of interest, there is that really kind of that V shape that drops down in 2021 that might pique someone's interest or curiosity. That is your student activity line, and obviously during COVID, a lot of those activities were canceled. So we can dig a little bit deeper into the data with regard to instruction support. I just went in and looked at I compared the reported numbers in 2005 to 2023 by district, and you can then notice which districts have really grown in support. I was really curious. I thought that maybe it was an Anchorage, like an urban areas thing. But it really isn't. The majority of these expenditures seem to have happened in the Lower Kuskokwim, North Slope Borough, Yukon, Lower Yukon, Northwest Arctic Borough, and Bering Strait Borough. All of those numbers outpace inflation by quite a bit. Inflation accounts for about $40 million of the change. That would be the expected growth based on 2005. So there's about $100 million of excess growth. And I'm sure that there's a good explanation for why that is. But if you wanted an answer, this would be where you would look.
Representative Hemshu?
Could I have the latitude just to make a comment on Lower Kuskokwim?
Can you hold that comment to the end so we can get through the slides? Thank you.
Lots of time. I only have a couple more slides, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Representative Hemshire. He said it was okay.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Through the chair, Mr. King, thank you. Lower Kuskokwim gave us a presentation a while back, and all of the work that they're doing to provide a bilingual curriculum in their lower grade levels would come at some expense. And so when I looked at this, I was like, whoa, what's up with the Lower Kuskokwim line? But it makes a lot of sense if you think about not only the translation work that they've done for their curriculum materials, but then publishing those, you know, curriculum materials that you can buy have to be translated and republished to operate a bilingual school in Yuktun, not in Spanish. So that helped me understand the context maybe of that line.
Comment? Question?
Representative, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. So it is a $30 million a year increase, which is a substantial amount of money relative to the other district expenses. I am positive that there are explanations for why that exists. The one that Representative Hemchu just mentioned is one. I also know that there is a program sending residents to UAF to become certified teachers that might fall under that category. And maybe there's some instruction spending that's being categorized as support. I don't know. Maybe the member from Bethel might have some insight.
The member from Bethel, I have a question to ask you too. Mr. McCormick, or Representative McCormick, how many students are in that school district?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Open dialogue? Did you want to?
No, I don't have anything to say. Okay. Thank you. Other than, like, I don't know what's going on right now. Thank you.
we're talking about the budget with the school districts. Go ahead, Representative Prox.
Well, just a comment. We don't have any control over the individual school district budgets. Mm-hmm. But the question, if we're focusing on the spike in Lower Kuskokwim, are they reducing spending? They must be in some other category. Don't know what that is. So let's not get too focused on.
I just want to reiterate that Mr. King is here. He's just putting on the board the numbers and where they're falling. He doesn't really have an opinion on any of it. He's just giving a presentation on numbers.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I would also point out that that the Lower Kuskokwim number is only $30 million of $143 million, so I wouldn't focus too much on just that one number. Again, this is just a breakdown of what the data says. I don't know how to interpret it. Those are good questions for the districts themselves.
Continue.
And then, Madam Chair, we noticed that the special needs funding and expenditures outpaced other instruction on that chart. If I go back, so you can see that special education instruction and support outpaced instruction growth over this period. And so we're just kind of looking at what that means. And so the current state's funding formula provides special needs funding by two ways. One is through the ADM, through the foundation formula directly. This is the 0.2 multiplier that applies to the formula. And when you compare the ADM before the special needs factors applied to after it, you'll see that it accounts for about $193 million. And then there's an additional special needs funding mechanism called intensive special needs, which is 13 times the BSA per student that is qualified as intensive special needs. And so that totals up to $248 million. And so combined, the state's contribution to special needs is $441 million in 2024 in the budget based on the formula.
Representative Hemchut.
Again, the latitude, just to make a comment on that.
Yep, please do.
Thank you. Through the chair, the federal law governing special ed requires a lot of what's reflected here, but the federal funding to support that falls very short of what the law requires. So this is a federal unfunded mandate that the schools bear and that the state then also bears. So I just wanted to point out that I, speaking as a teacher, am grateful for this funding because it allows us to have every child in our classroom, no matter what, but it does come with expense.
Thank you, Representative Hemchut. Mr. King?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In follow-up to that, I would point out that there are additional funds for special education from other sources in addition to the state funding. And I would also point out that if the actual expenditures that are necessary for special education exceed this amount, the school districts still have to pay it. They just have to pay it from another source. Or if their special needs are less than this amount, they can use the additional funding for another purpose. It's not restricted to special needs.
Thank you. Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, do we have any way of keeping track whether in some districts they have excess needs and are short funded, if you will, while in other districts it's possible that there's excess funds available? Do we have any way of tracking or knowing whether that or whether that's a significant consideration, I guess?
Representative Prox, through the chair, there are two categories that are reported based off of the deed data called SPED instruction, SPED support. And so we can see how much money is being spent on those purposes. Whether that's the right amount of money or not is unclear, or whether there are additional funds for in other categories that are supporting those students is unclear. But what we can do is look at the money that the districts are reporting as spending for those purposes and compare that to the funding that the state is giving to them, kind of tagged for those purposes, but not restricted to it. And so when I do that, that's slide 28, when I look at the expenditures, the reported expenditures on those two categories, and compare it to the amount of money that is tagged as special needs from the state, you can see that the funding appears to be over what they're spending. And again, there's probably a very good explanation for why that's the case, but that's what the data show.
Representative Hemshut, or did Ms. Representative Proxy have a follow-up?
Yes. There is a statistically significant difference, excessive money at the state level, aggregate level. We're funding more than is spent for that purpose. But is there a way, and then going digging deeper into that, are individual schools, I would guess there's wide variation per school. Some are probably spending much more on intensive needs. I think that's what we're talking. Oh, no, this is just spending special needs. Very confusing. Yeah, I would imagine, though, still, that there's some districts are spending quite a bit more than they're receiving, and then there's some that are spending quite a bit less, and that we might need to know, we might need to have that information in order to make a rational change to that part of the funding formula.
Madam Chair, I'm not making any policy recommendations here. However, I would point out that the last time that this formula was studied by a legislative consultant in 2015, that was one of the points that were brought forward, that the funding for special education is not tied to the number of students that require those needs. And so there are districts that are quote unquote overfunded for that and other districts that are quote unquote underfunded. That is an observation that the consultant did make. And I would also just caution, I suppose, that I don't really know how these districts are categorizing expenditures as special needs or not. It's very possible that a student is in the general classroom for most of the period and for in the special rooms for other portions. And I don't know how those expenditures are being categorized. So it's not to say that this data is saying that something is amiss. It's just showing you, you know, if there was interest in whether special education is appropriately funded or not, you can draw your own conclusions.
Thank you. We're going to go with Representative Hemshut, Story, and then Ruffridge. Go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. King, for this definition of special needs, the green line, does that include, or maybe the red line, does that include English language learners and gifted?
Representative Hemshut, through the chair, it should. How the districts actually report it is a question I can't answer.
Follow-up. Can you explain how you got the expenditures line? Like, what's the information you used for the expenditures line?
Representative Hemshut, through the chair, there are two categories within the data that is provided by the Department of Education. When you pull down their expenditure reports from the districts, those numbers are reported separately, and so I just took those numbers directly. I did this. There's no analysis or no data collection here. This is just numbers that are presented.
Thank you, Representative. Oh, go ahead. One follow-up.
Yeah, thanks. Through the chair, I guess I would just point out in my district, we, you know, the IEPs would be one way of reporting, but then whatever we have left goes into the gifted program, and we expand that to whatever level we can. And so our lines would pretty much match, I think, but I can see the variability in districts. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story.
Yes. Through the chair, is this chart inflation-proof?
Representative Story, it is not. However, the distance between the lines would not change if it were.
I'll follow up. So you're saying that if this was inflation-proof, that it would, our funding would buy less, but you're saying that you would drop down the expenses?
Representative Story, through the chair, if you inflation adjusted both the funding and the expenditures, then the distance between the lines wouldn't change.
Okay, follow up.
Through the chair, go ahead.
Have you kept track of the numbers of special ed students increasing over these years? I know that we have heard from districts that our kids who are in special ed have been increasing significantly.
Representative Story, through the chair, there isn't a reported number available. Maybe there is, but I didn't find it, for non-intensive special needs. The number for intensive special needs is reported within the foundation formula data that DEED releases, and there is a significant increase from 2005. It was, I want to say, 1,700 or so students, and there are now 3,200 or more. So the number of students that are classified as intensive special needs has increased dramatically over the years. Whether that means that something has changed or that the categorization has changed or some other factor, I can't say.
Brief Eddies.
Hey, Chair Allard, through the chair. Can you, Mr. King, just help me understand what do you have here as falling inside of special needs? Could you just describe what those are?
Coach, I referenced the Department of Education is the one that has the chart of accounts that asks the districts to report the expenditures as special needs. So it's not something that I've done. Within that chart of accounts, special education funding for instruction is for your special education teachers and the paras that are in those special education classes. And special education support would be the support for those classrooms.
Could you, just in your understanding, describe for me what you would consider a special education classroom?
Representative Ruffridge, these should be any classroom where the primary teacher, the certificated teacher in charge, is a special education instructor. That's my interpretation of a special education classroom. There may be classroom aides that support a special needs child in a general classroom. This should also include gifted and talented programs. It should include any other programs by language all of the other different factors that are special education, which simply means not general education.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, just to clarify, there is a distinction between special needs and intensive special needs. Is the funding and expenditure for intensive special needs included in this chart, or is that a separate chart?
Representative Prox, through the chair, that money is included here. It's one of the two categories. So the combination of these two categories is what generates that green line, which is intensive and non-intensive needs. Again, none of that money is restricted to those uses, but that is how the money is determined to go to the district. Mm-hmm.
Continue.
And I think I only have one more slide, Madam Chair, and that's just to point out that it might not be the case that Alaska wants to be average. And so the premise that we are spending more money than the average, it might not be the right premise. It's a policy decision for the legislature. And what you're seeing here is all 50 states just plotted based on the proficiency of their fourth graders in the last NAEP exam compared to the instruction adjusted for cost of living per student. And I took out the operating cost because it is distortive. And what you find is that there is not a significant relationship between funding and outcomes based off of total expenditures. The relationship is stronger when you look at how much money is going into the classrooms versus outputs. And actually, the report that I mentioned earlier from 2015 made the same conclusion. Their conclusion was a $1,000 increase per student would increase our proficiency by about 2% in reading. So there is a very strong relationship between additional funding in the classroom. And they were very careful to make that distinction that it has to be classroom instruction and not general expenditures. You will see better results if you do spend more money. You'll notice that the line represents what you would expect based off of the spending, what your outcomes should be. You'll notice that there is a lot of variability around that line, which means that this is actually not statistically significant. It has a very low R-squared value. And so just because you increase spending does not mean that you will move to the right. It just means that tendency you should. You will definitely move up because you spend more money. And any number above the line suggests that you might be spending, outspending your results. And anything below the line would suggest that you're getting better results than expected based on the amount of money that you're spending. And so I just pointed out a couple of the states that are of interest on the graphic, but the other 45 states are also listed there. And you'll notice that Alaska is above the line, and that is primarily because of those higher benefits. And so what you're seeing here, I think, once you make that adjustment for those higher benefits, mostly the unfunded liability, Alaska is pretty much on the line. And so an increase in instruction theoretically should increase output outcomes.
Thank you, Representative Hemshoop.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, can you explain outcomes? What?
Representative Hemshoop, through the chair, on this graphic, outcomes means proficiency on the NAEP score based off of fourth grade reading. And what you're showing, what this graphic is showing, is the number of students that scored above basic. The NAEP scores themselves could also be used, or the number percent above proficiency could be used. Those words mean things and different things to different people.
Thank you. Okay, next slide.
I think that's the last slide, Madam Chair. That just some takeaways for you. I don't need to read them. You can read them yourself. So I can conclude there, Madam Chair.
Okay, are there any last questions or comments from? We'll start with Representative Hemshoop.
Thank you, through the chair. Yes, through the chair. Mm-hmm. Are these comments to close out for the day?
Yep.
Or for Mr. King?
Yep.
Okay.
Or to him, however you want to just close it up.
Okay. I appreciate the extra time and effort that you've put into bringing this to us today. I guess my main comment is I was at a meeting last night where test scores aren't the measure, and now today test scores are the measure. So we need to decide how we measure the success of Alaska schools, and I would welcome the increased investment in our schools. And I would just, I guess, add, if we invest through the BSA, then transportation might take some of that money, and some of the other things that the schools have to do will eat up the money that we would like to have going to instruction. And so, but the BSA will also provide some stability in funding, which will help districts focus on what they're there to do. They're not going to be scrambling for how are we going to get kids to school and how are we going to fill positions. And so I think that an increase in the BSA is supported by this presentation. And I would welcome a conversation where we discuss what are the outcomes we're looking for and how are we going to measure the outcomes of our schools.
Thank you, Representative Hemshoop. Representative Prox, do you have any last comments?
Well, thank you to the chair. Thank you for the work that you've done on this, Mr. King. I agree with Representative Hemshoop that the first thing we need to focus on is what are we going to agree on for outcomes. That's what we're after, is outcomes first, and then everything has to fit within that frame of reference. And I don't think we have agreement on the outcomes, and we need to get there.
I'll let you do the closing comments. Representative Ruffridge, do you have any closing comments?
No comments, thank you.
Representative McCormick, do you have
no
any
comments,
closing
thank
comments?
You.
Oh, thank you. Representative McKay, do you have any closing comments or question?
No, I just think that it's very important that we look at this kind of data to understand where the money, where the significant amount of money is going. I think the purpose was to show that the state is just part of the funding that our schools receive, and we need to be aware of where all that money's going. And I think that's our responsibility as legislators, as the board of directors for the state of Alaska, is to know where the money's going and what are we getting for it. And I appreciate Mr. King's work on this and the opportunity to look at it today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story, closing comments or questions?
Thank you. I too want to thank Mr. King for the report, and it does have a lot of questions and really some things I hope we can look into, if not this year, next year, about the support categories. So and instructional support, so we can understand more, you know, what the districts spend and do in those areas. I think that would be helpful. I do think that it does collaborate with ICER's study on education that shows the reason, a lot of the reasons our costs are high is because of our health benefits, because of our rural, the number of rural, small rural schools, and because of our costs of operations, the fuel, things like that. So it's good when we see certain things collaborate with one another. Helps us understand things. And I think, you know, and I know that it's hard to evaluate things and put one metric. And I do know that when our schools reopened last year, I mean, the majority of people were just so happy to be back together and to be learning together. And that metric, you know, is just, you know, makes my heart happy, because sometimes I think it just seems when we always focus on the reading score that things are just, you know, not good when there are so many good things happening. And I appreciate the look at funding. I do know that we do have a lot of fixed costs. And so, and I'm concerned about the Reads Act and how we want to target more training, which would be a non-support thing in the column. We're going to be spending a lot of money on professional development for the science of reading. And we have those fixed costs going up. So I think it's really important that we are funding enough money so we're impacting instruction, because we know we have those increases that we can't quit funding, such as fuel and property insurance. So thank you again for your report.
Thank you. And I just have a quick comment. So to be clear, this is federal, state, and local. And the BSA is not all. We do have funding coming in from various avenues. And I think that thank you so much for your presentation. And the fact of the matter is, numbers don't lie. Go ahead, Mr. King. You have your last word, your comments, if you wanted to address any of the comments that were made here today. And thank you. This took a lot of time and effort, and I look forward to doing more.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope I satisfied your request. And I, in response to some of the comments that were made in closing, I just respond. The value metric that we want to measure is quite important. If we're going to compare ourselves to other states, then you need a common base of comparison. And that is why that information was presented on the slide. It's because it's the information that is available. It doesn't mean that that's the only metric that is the right metric. And how Alaska wants to determine success is definitely a decision that we can make. But whatever it is, we should measure it over time and make sure that we're getting the results that we're intending to get. The Reads Act being one of those efforts, not just increasing funding, but also increasing the directive, the mandate to accomplish that goal. The other comment that I would make is that it is the case that, especially now with the district cost factors, those district cost factors are static. They've been static for decades, at least a decade, more than a decade. The cost of fuel is not static. And so when the cost of fuel changes and goes up, that money necessarily comes out of the classroom. And so there are opportunities for Alaska to better allocate its funding. We talk about a few ways here to make sure that those results are being accomplished.
Thank you very much, Mr. King. That concludes our business for today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 9:47 a.m.